Hello, and welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm Chuck Stanley, senior reporter for InfraLogic, and today I'm speaking with Gunther Glenk, an assistant professor of business at the University of Mannheim and a climate fellow at Harvard Business School's Institute for Business and Global Society. Dr. Glenk's research focuses on risks and opportunities in corporate decarbonization, and he's the co-author of a recent study on price trends for production of green hydrogen, which is a key component of the Biden administration's strategy for reducing emissions from hard-to-decarbonize sectors of the economy. Dr. Glenk, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And so your recent work focuses on cost trends for green hydrogen technologies. For those who may not be familiar with discussions around clean hydrogen, I wonder if you could give a brief description of how green hydrogen specifically differs from traditional, what we call gray hydrogen, as well as blue hydrogen, which is another technology that we're hearing a lot about in this space.
Green hydrogen refers to the production of hydrogen from renewable or green electricity via water electrolysis. In this process, electricity induced in water splits the water molecule into oxygen and hydrogen. Gray hydrogen usually refers to the production of hydrogen from natural gas via steam methane reforming. Here, methane and water molecules react to form carbon dioxide and hydrogen. Now, blue hydrogen usually refers to the same production pathway as gray hydrogen, but the carbon dioxide is captured and not directly released into the atmosphere. Clean hydrogen usually includes both green and blue hydrogen. The global demand for hydrogen today amounts to about 100 million tons per year. Almost all of this hydrogen is produced from fossil fuels under substantial carbon emissions.
And there is, of course, a lot of excitement around the possibility of using green hydrogen to displace gray hydrogen as an emission source and also reduce carbon emissions in a variety of other sectors, from heavy transportation to industrial heat. And the Biden administration's infrastructure and clean energy laws provide significant funding to move the technology forward. Can you tell us a little bit about your research on the cost of green hydrogen production and how production cost trends might impact the development of a clean hydrogen market in the United States?
Widespread adoption of green hydrogen will depend on significant reductions in the cost of green hydrogen production. Our new study examines the cost dynamics of green hydrogen production. In particular, our study first estimates the so-called learning curves of different water electrolysis technologies in terms of the advances in system prices and energy efficiency over the past two decades. Such learning curves have served as a reliable measure of technological progress for solar photovoltaic modules, wind turbines, or lithium-ion batteries. Our estimates show that with every doubling of cumulative installed capacity, system prices of water electrolyzers declined by 14 to 17%, while energy efficiency increased by about 2%. These calculations are based on data from power-to-gas plants commissioned worldwide between 2000 and 2020. Based on these estimates, we then project the trajectories of the life cycle costs of electrolytic hydrogen production. Our projections here show that these costs will likely fall in the range of about $1.6 to $1.9 per kilogram by 2030, which is a decline from about $3 to $5 per kilogram today. And these values all exclude subsidies that might be available then.
So if I understand you correctly, you're taking where the technology is and historical trends, but also comparing it with the way other technologies that have scaled up in similar ways have gained efficiencies and reduced in cost over time. Is that right?
That is correct.
And in the paper, you mentioned the Department of Energy's initiative to reduce the cost of green hydrogen to a dollar a kilogram. As you said here, you project the costs to approach that level by 2030, but they won't quite fall to that level. Can you tell us in real world terms what the significance of that dollar per kilogram target means and what it might mean for the sector if prices evolve the way you expect?
A dollar per kilogram is often seen as the threshold at which green hydrogen becomes cost competitive with gray hydrogen triggering the widespread adoption of green hydrogen. As you say, our projections suggest that the life cycle cost of electrolytic hydrogen production will likely approach, but not quite reach, this threshold. However, transaction prices for hydrogen actually span a wide range, comprising three main segments that vary primarily with scale and purity. Large-scale supply between $1 and $2 per kilogram, medium-scale supply between $2 and $4 per kilogram, and small-scale supply above $4 per kilogram. Now, based on these supply prices, green hydrogen production can be cost competitive with small and medium scale hydrogen supply from fossil fuels today. Furthermore, our projections show that green hydrogen will likely become widely cost competitive with large scale hydrogen supply in the range of $1 to $2 per kilogram.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that by the end of the decade, you expect green hydrogen to become cheaper to produce than either gray or blue hydrogen for the uses that it's most commonly applied to now, and that you can see green hydrogen in the foreseeable future falling below the production cost at large scale production as well. Is that right?
Yeah, our study projects that green hydrogen production will likely become cost competitive with gray or blue hydrogen production in locations with great resources for renewable power generation. That means windy, sunny, or hydroelectric locations. But there is another aspect to consider, and that is the location of hydrogen customers. Ideally, hydrogen customers are located in areas with great resources for renewable power generation. For example, Texas is home to several large hydrogen customers today and has great resources for wind and solar power. If hydrogen customers are located elsewhere, you face a trade-off. You can either locate the electrolyzer close to your customer and produce hydrogen at a higher unit cost due to the lower utilization of your production capacity, or you can locate the electrolyzer in a place with great resources for renewable power generation, produce hydrogen at a lower unit cost, but then face the cost of transporting the hydrogen to your customer. The price ranges for hydrogen supply that I mentioned earlier reflect the willingness of customers to pay to have hydrogen delivered to their production site. Project developers for green hydrogen production will have to decide for each new project where to locate the electrolyzer, depending on their customers' willingness to pay for hydrogen and the availability of natural resources.
Right, and I understand this goes beyond the scope of your research here, but my understanding is that the transport of hydrogen is both a very complicated and pricey question that the industry is looking to solve, right?
That is correct. And it is currently still an open question which mode of transportation will be the cheapest form of transporting hydrogen across what type of distance. There can be road transportation with trailer trucks, there can also be pipelines, or there can be shipping of hydrogen across oceans. It depends on the distance that needs to be covered and sort of the ground that needs to be covered too.
Right. And another interesting thing that you mentioned to me prior to the show is that in addition to production costs going down over time, the concentration of where those costs fall in the production process will also change over time. Can you explain to listeners why that might be and how that will affect the investment case for green hydrogen facilities?
Electrolyzer technologies today still require a significant capital investment. So system prices for equipment from Western manufacturers today range from about $1,000 to $2,000 per kilowatt of installed capacity, depending on the technology. A major share of the life cycle cost of green hydrogen production therefore stems from the capital investment and fixed operating costs of the facility. Our study projects that the system prices will likely fall in the range of $250 to $450 per kilowatt for alkaline electrolyzers and PEM electrolyzer, and in the range of $450 to $750 per kilowatt for solid oxide cell electrolyzers by 2030. These three technologies are the three main electrolyzer technologies available in the market today. Now, with these reductions, electricity prices will become the dominant component of the life cycle cost of hydrogen production by 2030. Achieving low cost of high green hydrogen production ultimately depends on the availability of inexpensive and clean electricity. Now, in addition to this change in the composition of production costs, the reduction in system prices is driving a second development. The higher system prices today require the operator of an electrolyzer to achieve a higher utilization of the production capacity. In other words, the operator seeks to use most hours of the year to convert electricity to hydrogen and only skip the hours with very high electricity prices. Now, lower system prices in the future will allow the operator to achieve a lower capacity utilization. That means the operator can skip more hours of the year with higher electricity prices. Or another way of looking at this is that electrolyzers will become better at handling intermittent power supply, not only from a technological point of view, but also from an economic point of view.
So the increasing share of that variable operating cost in the total cost for producing the hydrogen will allow these green hydrogen facilities to operate more flexibly in response to variable production from intermittent renewable resources.
Exactly.
And now there's a lot of excitement about the possible uses for green hydrogen as the sector grows in scale. Sticking with that 2030 timeline here, where do you expect green hydrogen to gain a place in the market as we get toward the end of the decade? And what should we be watching for with regards to the potential for green hydrogen to displace other existing energy sources?
Before the IRA, green hydrogen was first adopted by small and medium scale hydrogen customers who have a higher willingness to pay for hydrogen supply. Examples of such customers include food processing companies, electronics manufacturers, and pharmaceutical and chemical companies. With the subsidies available under the IRA of up to $3 per kilogram, green hydrogen has also attracted substantial investments from large-scale customers. Such customers today mainly include ammonia or fertilizer producers and oil and gas refining companies. So the IRA appears to have significantly accelerated the adoption of green hydrogen by both existing and new hydrogen customers. Prominent examples of new customers already making investments on the ground include steel producers and producers of synthetic aviation or marine fuels. It remains more an open question to what extent green hydrogen will be used in heavy-duty ground transportation and electricity storage. Here, hydrogen stands in direct competition with batteries, which are also experiencing rapid technological and cost developments. It is often argued that hydrogen would be more suitable for long-distance transportation and long-term energy storage, while batteries would be more suitable for shorter distances and short-term energy storage. But really, it remains unclear where the transition from one technology to the other technology would be. And it is also conceivable that the two technologies will coexist, serving different parts of the markets.
And with regard to these potential use cases that are kind of further out in the future and harder to reach, I think it's interesting to note here that the EPA has a current proposal to cap power plant emissions that would, by around 2040, require the use of either emissions capture technology or the substitution of green hydrogen as a fuel source at new natural gas plants. From what you're saying about the input energy as a component of the cost for producing green hydrogen, it doesn't necessarily sound like using green hydrogen for a big, continuously operating gas plant is likely to be the most efficient use for the technology. Is that right?
Well, with the growing share of renewable power generation, natural gas power plants will increasingly take on the role of peaker plants, complementing the intermittent power generation from wind and solar energy sources. This development can already be observed in jurisdictions with high shares of renewable power generation, such as California, Texas, the United Kingdom, and Germany. These jurisdictions have also seen a strong growth in the deployment of grid-scale battery energy storage. And this growth, if it continues over the coming years, will further reduce the share of electricity generation provided by natural gas power plants. Now, as you say, natural gas power plants can install a carbon capture unit or switch to green hydrogen to further reduce their direct emissions. In any case, gas power plants will experience a declining utilization due to the other market dynamics I just described. This will require operators to charge higher markups on the variable operating costs to recover the fixed and capital cost of their capacity. An alternative to hydrogen-fired gas power plants could be reversible electrolyzers. PEM and solid oxide cell electrolyzers, two of the main technologies today, they can convert electricity to hydrogen at times of ample power supply, but they can also operate in the reverse direction to deliver electricity during times when power is relatively scarce and therefore more expensive. A key advantage of such reversible systems is that they can achieve a high capacity utilization. This allows operators to charge only small markups on the price of hydrogen used to generate electricity. And in turn, this could make such systems more competitive than gas power plants based on hydrogen or carbon capture in a future energy system.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch as these market technology and policy dynamics all play out in the coming decades. Dr. Glenk, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, you can follow this issue and other great work being done by Dr. Glenk and his colleagues at the Harvard Business School's Institute for Business and Global Society at the website hbs.edu/BIGS. That's all for this edition of Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. Be sure to follow us and leave a review on the podcast app of your choice. And check out InfraLogic for all your infrastructure and energy sector news. I'm Chuck Stanley. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.